Episode 205 von Win Today, Hockey O'Clock. Dylan Stanley, Pioneers Season Debrief.
That has probably been the greatest joy here, is being able to be involved in so many hockey players' lives and families' lives. That has been a joy. It's been a pleasure. I'm just proud to have been able to create memories for so many hockey families here, because that was ultimately the goal, was to create memories for kids in Vorarlberg. And then hopefully I created some memories for hockey fans here from my playing days and my coaching time. And I think there's one thing I would love people to kind of remember, is just there always could have been a better coach and always could have been a better import player, 100%. But I think ultimately my deciding factor, or not my deciding factor, but something that helped me here, was I just cared a lot.
Win Today Hockey. O'Clock.
In diesem Augenblick wird jetzt richtig hitzig. Und ich schreibe Kollert über die Linie.
Mittendrin statt nur dabei.
Das ist unglaublich, was die hier zelebrieren. Nice move, another nice move. Oh, score! Oh, what a goal! It doesn't get any better than this.
The playoffs and the Win Today Ice Hockey League have officially started. It's the quarterfinals that have been going on this week already. Two rounds behind us, at the very least two more rounds in front of us or ahead of us. So naturally, it's also time to look back on some of the teams that didn't make the cut, that didn't make the final eight. And we're now talking to a member of a team, still a member of a team, that went to the dance of the final eight last year. Unfortunately, couldn't repeat that feat this year, but I'm still incredibly honored that he's taken some of his valuable time to grace the Win Today Hockey O'Clock podcast. It's, of course, Dylan Stanley. And I'm not certain if I should still call you Coach Dylan Stanley, but I'm just starting it off that way. Coach Stanley, so thankful that you're taking the time to jump onto the show.
Yeah, really happy to be here, Martin. Anytime to talk about a season and kind of reminisce and think about the good and the bad is kind of part of the coaching life and fun to do with somebody else than the walls of my office.
The funny thing is, when we tried to set up the interview and get an appointment that both kind of fits our schedules, the news hadn't hit yet that you'd be leaving the Pioneers Vorarlberg, that you'd move on to newer endeavors. You had a longer interview on the Pioneers social media channels where you talked about everything that will come, but obviously you can't go into details yet. What's exactly awaiting? At what point will you be able to educate fans and listeners on what's awaiting you on your next chapter?
Yeah, it is a little tricky, with these kind of things, especially when you got a family at home too and stuff like that. You've got to give the family information, but maybe not all of it. I'm very fortunate to have been offered a new opportunity. It's a big one for my career and also a great opportunity for my family as well. You know, I got two little kids that play hockey and things like that as well. So it's going to be a big step, a big challenge. We're excited. In terms of information, that's kind of in the hands of the new club. Obviously, there's playoff hockey starting, and you can imagine that, an organization doesn't want to disrupt the flow of a team and a staff and those kind of things like that right now. So, honestly, that's, like I said, it's in the hands of the new club. But obviously, that's directly related to, the ends of seasons and playoff hockey and whatnot, information will be kept quiet until further notice. It was a big moment in the Stanley household for us to kind of talk about that and make that decision.
And I'll respect the fact that obviously it's in the new club's hands to let other people know and let the information hit the newsstands. But what I'm always interested in is process and processes, and obviously there's always a process going into thinking about next chapters, next steps. At what points were you starting to consider that your career might happen somewhere else than in Fekir, or continue somewhere else than in Fekir?
Yeah, it's a great question. And in the coaching world, I'm only 41, so it's, I would say, young. And the opportunity that I've been given here in Vorarlberg and in Falkirk has been an incredible one for at my point in my career, to be able to be involved in the whole process, from building teams and you know, being able to hire staff and really work from the bottom up in a league where, when I did take over, we were last place by quite a bit. It's been incredible for my career. And did I think the move was going to be maybe this year? Not necessarily. That wasn't originally part of the plan with my family. But in the coaching world, when your phone rings, you take a call, and a call led to a meeting, and a meeting led to another meeting. And it happened to be a situation that I think anybody in my shoes probably would have said yes to quite quickly. And for our family, it took a little bit of time, just because this has been home for 11 years. And it was, I guess, to answer your question, Martin, I wasn't necessarily looking just yet. But I think, as a player, as a coach, anything in the professional sports world, when somebody calls you, there's usually a good reason to take that call. And it's always a nice feeling to, like I said to my wife, she hasn't experienced me being fired yet. And I said, so this was a nice experience that I was able to, kind of set up our family and my career with the next move, while having such a good situation here in Vorarlberg as well. So we weren't in the process of, it's funny, when these phone calls came through, I had to find myself an agent, because it wasn't something that I was, in the process of taking time, to look for just yet. And that was something I was quite clear with my club when I did bring up, the news to them, was, it wasn't that I was trying to leave, but, it was a situation that came to me, directly from a club that, I just had to pursue. And at the beginning, to be honest, Martin, I was really excited just to be part of the interview process, because I think that's a great way to learn as a professional, obviously. And a couple of weeks later, after some meetings and presentations, the phone call came in that, the job was mine if I wanted it. So pretty quickly, my wife and I had to kind of sit down and sort that out. But like I said, professionally and for family reasons, I think anybody in my shoes would agree that this was a good move.
I think, along with many, many fans of yours and people who followed your career, I'm really curious to find out where you'll be heading. Just full disclosure, I don't know shit, as always, as people would say. And that's a good thing, because, again, I'm interested in processes and how this works. And knowing you, you're a family first and a family second man, and a lot of people would probably say the same about you. And just knowing that there is this next big step, but you've been tied to a place you've been lucky enough to stay in one place for more than a decade, which hardly ever happens in professional hockey careers. What was kind of the lowest common denominator that you and your family were looking for you in conjunction to say, okay, green light, we're doing this?
Yeah, that it's a great question, because you have to factor in my career and my family in one move. We're really fortunate that my wife owns her own company, that she can work online, so her kind of stuff is a little bit easy and adaptable. And for the kids and myself, obviously schooling's important. We needed to make sure we're going to go to a place that the kids can continue a high level of schooling. That's really important to my wife and I. And then obviously the kids' hockey is important to us. It's important to them, actually, I should say that. I think that was the first question they both had, was, well, where am I going to play? And so that was something that this new move allows them the next level of opportunity. And then for me, Martin, I feel that the opportunities that have came to me here in Falkirk have came through grinding and a lot of hard work. And I still feel like there's more. And, my wife and I have always talked that if I can continue to push my career to the next level, then we're going to keep trying to, not trying, but keep pushing this dream. You know, ultimately we are a Canadian family, even though we've been living over here for so long. And I'm getting a chance to go to a league that maybe I wouldn't have thought was possible, especially at this point in my career. And that's going to give me a chance to learn a lot of new stuff. It's going to give me a chance to be around a new caliber of players and coaches and organizations. And at the end of the day, the ultimate answer was, this was going to give my career a new path. And maybe a little sooner than we expected, but that's not a bad thing at all. And I'm still a sportsman at heart, and this is giving me a chance to be in a brand new environment that I'm going to learn a lot from. And I am super thankful, obviously, of the situation we've had here for so many years. But this is going to be fun, and I'm ready. And you know, like I mentioned with the Pioneers press releases. Is, you know, hopefully there's a reason one day when the club is ready to compete for that next level, I'm more ready as a coach as well. But I think this is a good time, and I think it's a good time for my family. And it was just, you know, obviously it's hard to talk about it because we're not talking about what team or league, but really excited for this new opportunity, Martin. And ultimately I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I think it checked off all the boxes for my career and my family. And that made it much easier.
Really happy for you to just get this out of the way, and I tremendously appreciate you talking about the family stuff too, because all too often our sport is seen as a helmet sport, and it's a player having to play his game, but one sometimes just doesn't see the human being behind the shield or behind the bench. So there are so many things that have to work out and that you guys have to figure out. So this is really interesting stuff. And I promise you, when we started the conversation, that basically 2/3 of the conversation, or maybe 3/4, would be about the season debrief for the Pioneers for Aalborg. But just to have talked about this and hopefully have an educated or enlightened a couple people out there in terms of how these things are working and what has to come together to make this work is really, really interesting. And I've always had one question that I've never really asked you. When heading into this conversation, I was like, we probably could have done this in German too. So as you're a big goodbye to Pioneers fans in the region, just showing off your German. But what I was always wondering to get this out properly is how it is to try or have to pick up German in a region where the dialect is as strong as Vorarlberg. Now, having grown up here myself, I know about all the wrinkles that the Vorarlbergian accent or dialect brings with it. But how is it for a native English-speaking person coming here, being or trying to learn standard German, and then being surrounded by people who are deviating as far away as possible from standard German as there is?
I think that's the first time I've been asked that question. And it is, you know what, I think the most awkward moments have been the moments to do with like, you have a young child is when you're putting your kids into school, you know, and we're going years and years back now. My son now is in the sixth class and my daughter's in the fourth class. But when we were putting them into spiel groups and kindergartens and stuff like that, for lack of a better word, like I felt like an idiot, and you know what I mean? Like I'm trying to help my child and my German around the rink was acceptable and things like that, but it wasn't, you know, all your friends are hockey people and in the hockey world, but then all of a sudden you got to go meet the teacher, the director, and you know, some know about hockey, some know nothing. And I think sometimes they probably looked at my wife and I and thought we were really uneducated people. And maybe we were just quiet or, you know, things like that. So there was those moments, that I think were probably just, my wife and I probably were the only two that felt uncomfortable. The kids adapted really quick. Their Vorarlberg Deutsch is awesome. Sometimes they use it just to bug my wife and I, cause we have no idea if they really want to get into it. you know, we go up to Montafon to use the ice rink there quite a bit. And that's even another level where I have no idea what's going on.
Holy F. Yes.
Yeah. No idea. I'm happy if I can order a coffee and a water at the restaurant and get through that. But no, it's, you know what, the community in Vorarlberg, as much as the language is really tricky and if people are sitting around the, you know, having a couple beers and the Vorarlberg douche comes out even stronger, I have no idea what's going on, but it's been cool here. You know what? A lot of people from Vorarlberg sometimes ask me, oh, is it hard to live here? Cause sometimes the Vorarlbergers aren't that accepting of new people, you know? And I my wife and I have felt different about it. I think maybe the hockey ties you in and makes you feel like you're maybe a part of it a little bit more, but it's been a great community for us. But yes, it, you know, when I look back at my time as a player in Germany and it was my first years in Europe, it was much easier to figure out what people were saying and to be able to kind of adapt to that. And every time we go out to, you know, on road trips and stuff like that, it does remind you that the Hochdeutsch, you know, comes across a little bit smoother, especially for somebody that, you know, was always speaking with a Canadian, like an English dialect, you know, like your lovely, some of your lovely co-hosts are the best to listen to. You know, I'm not going to mention any names, but when you start using that Canadian German, it's awesome. I love listening to it. So,
same here.
Yeah, exactly. So no, it has been a challenge, but, like I said, my kids have been amazing. Sometimes my wife and I can't help with schoolwork and we rely on Google Translate a little bit, but, no, we've been doing okay. And, I think what's been important for my wife and I and our kids is we've kept our house an English household. Some people argue with that, that we should be a little bit more adaptable to here. And I disagree. You know what I mean? We're Canadian. We want to be Canadian. You know, we want our kids to probably go to university someday in Canada, no matter where my job is or my wife's job is. So, yeah, it's been good. We only have English books in the house and English TV and stuff like that. And we've probably challenged the kids maybe a little bit more than necessary, with that. But, at the end of the day, that's kind of the values of our house. And I'm sure moving forward, the kids will miss the slang of Vorarlberg.
Which I'm curious about. What's your favorite Vorarlbergish phrase or word, the favorite, or the one thing that you'll take with you to your grave in 70, 80 years?
You know what? I can't get over the, in a good way. I love it. And I love hearing my kids use it. But it's a simple one, Martin. So I'm not going to like rock your world with this one, but it's habidere. Yeah. Like it's great. Like I like it. It rolls off the tongue, even if I don't say it very well. I love hearing guys walk into the rink saying it. Yeah. It just makes you smile. Like it's good. Like, and then, you know, That one's at the top of the list.
Habadi Yaga. Yeah. It's my honor. It's my pleasure. Way of saying hi for all the English speaking people, native English speaking people who are listening to this right now. Really kind of sums up the Vorarlbergian dialect accent nicely, which brings us to the one Vorarlbergian team as of right now in the Winter Day Ice Hockey League, the one that you coached for 2 years as a head coach, 3 years in total, with one being an assistant coach. Looking back on that entire tenure and at the danger of repeating the word process maybe too often, but coaching is a process, and in over the years you're of course developing as a coach. How would you sum up your development as a coach, as a teacher of hockey over those 3 years coaching a pro hockey team, and obviously bearing in mind that you've been coaching junior programs and junior players for a long time before that as well?
Well, you know, it's really easy to sum it up is that each year had, and I know every coach is probably going to say this, but each year had some drastic different hurdles. And if I just had to narrow it down a little bit, you know, year one as the assistant coach to Mark Habscheid, we were brand new to the league. We were late to kind of get involved and do everything. And we just kind of had to kind of wing it the whole year. Right. And I learned a lot from Mark. It was his first year in Europe, but I got to learn a lot just from his experience and more so just the conversations that we had in the office, the bus, coaching rooms, all that kind of stuff. Definitely got to learn a lot. And then I kind of got to, more so just be kind of really concerned that whole year about the building for the next year. You know what I mean? We kind of knew the year that it was going to be. And so my goal that year was to kind of start building the process for the following year. Did I know what my role was going to be yet? No, but I knew that it was going to be a big part of my job is to kind of help, you know, let's improve from year one. So that first year was a lot about just kind of enjoying the players and those relationships and building those relationships. I knew I was going to be back next year. I knew a decent amount of the guys would be back. So I wanted to make sure that I could kind of have stronger relationships with some of our core Austrian guys that year. And just get more buy-in from them moving forward. And then the rest was just kind of learning from Mark, watching Mark, whether it was a good thing or a bad thing. He had his difficulties that year too, with his first year in Europe and kind of our setback in the league. And then right away when Mark had decided it was time for him to leave at the end of that season and I was offered the job, I had kind of already started my plan. I'm a big planner. I have more notes and books filled than probably a lot of 41-year-olds do. And so I was excited for the challenge. And the first challenge was building that roster. I really appreciate that I was given a lot of that responsibility, because I think with our current situation here with our club, the amount of buy-in I got from new players in April and May and June, because I'm spending hours on the phone with them, Zoom calls with them, makes a big difference come training camp. That they really have a good idea of who their head coach is, what he wants. They know exactly what their role is going to be. And even just, personal things and casual conversations and stuff like that. So, those months of March and April and May and June, I might have worked more than I did some months during the season, to be honest, especially with some of the crazy late night hours of trying to get a hold of guys on the West Coast. I remember Stephen Allery that summer was in California. So, I'm an early to bed kind of guy. So I'd be setting an alarm to make sure I get up and make phone calls and stuff like that. So, but that second year, my goal was to have a lot of buy-in from the players. They were going to know exactly who was coaching their team and what my values were and what my, what I thought was a priority for me, but what I also thought was a priority from them. We were going to do it with a high level of energy, a high level of fun. But we were going to be intense. And then my goal was to make sure everybody cared. And so that year too was really difficult at the beginning of the year. A lot of people just look at our success at the end, but I think we had a 7-game losing streak at the beginning of the year and another 5-game or 6-game losing streak. Everybody talks about this year's tough start. That was an awful start. Just nobody talks about that year. There were some teams that were having worse starts, Bolzano was in last place that year for a little while at the beginning and Gratz had a tough year. So we kind of hid there at that 10-11 spot for quite a while. And I really enjoyed that year. I really enjoyed every year, but it was fun. We built and we built and we built. And we got a lot out of our players that year and we had such a fun time at the end of the year. It was great. And then unfortunately we made a lot of mistakes at the end of that season. We should have done a better job keeping players together. We should have done a better job keeping some guys in that dressing room. I know some of it is financial reasons and I don't blame any player for leaving for doubling, tripling, quadrupling his salary. That's ludicrous to stay. But if we just could have, found a way to do things earlier or whatnot, even though if it would have been selfish of the club to jump on some guys early, it would have been great for us. Could have been great for me. But then last offseason, put the work boots back on and myself and my assistant coach Johannes dug deeper into the analytics of things, started building all these boring spreadsheets with analytics that nobody really wants to hear about that had to do with every player in the East Coast and college hockey and stuff like that. So that stuff's been really fun, to be honest. That building stuff has been great. And again, we knew we were going to have a hangover from that success against Innsbruck and Klagenfurt and whatnot. And so we wanted to make sure the players felt like we were trying things. We weren't going to just rinse and repeat. So we built a new structure plan for this year, made some changes that we felt we could be better at. and really challenged the guys come training camp, even though we had, I think it was 12 new players in the room, that this was going to be a new year and we expected new things. And this year, Martin, I became a better coach. Year two, I became better at relationships and building a group and being an energy guy and a motivator, because that's what that team needed. We didn't practice as well, but man, did we show up for games. This year, our team practiced amazing. The tactics and the technical side of the things, we did a great job with, I believe. And so this year, I felt like I had time to become a better coach. It was the first year that I kind of pulled away from juniors. I guess in the second year there, my first year as a head coach, I was still the head coach of the U11 team. So granted, that probably wasn't a good idea, but it worked out. And so this year I was able to pull back from that stuff and spend a lot more time with video and analytics and the technical side. And I became a better coach this year. And, you know, I owe a lot to my staff as well. This is not just me by any means. And, I think some of that stuff really showed with our group in the second half. And, yeah, it's been a lot of fun. And, it's been three different years, but 3 years that have definitely made me a better person, a better coach. I look back on the highs and lows. Obviously the highs are obvious, but the lows are, you know, you'd be surprised the off-ice issues you deal with, from mental health problems to family problems and stuff like that you're helping players with. And those are the things that, you know, are hard days, but you really, if you feel like you can help somebody when those days are over, you, I don't want to say you feel good about yourself, because that's not what it is, but you feel like you're making a difference and you're there for somebody. And I think in 2025, that is really important. And I think it's some of those personal situations that probably in years to come will be the ones I remember the most.
And that's a funny thing, and it might be so random. And I had Mike Stewart a couple of years ago here on the Week Today Hockey O'Clock podcast. He was talking about a player who wasn't playing up to his standards, and he didn't know what was wrong with him. And then after a couple of talks, the player finally said, yeah, his dog had died, and he was devastated. And it's just interesting how certain things might affect a player's play, mental state of mind. And again, as random as a pet dying. But the problem is the hockey business is a result-orientated business. And when people look at, well, Dylan Stanley, 2 years as a head coach for the Pioneers. 1 year he made the playoffs, the other year he didn't, even though you narrowly missed out on the pre-playoffs. What's the biggest difference, if you had to narrow it down to one thing, between those 2 years? Is it just striking goal with the Auries of this world, or would you say it's something else?
You know what? It seems like such
knowing that's a combination of a lot of things, but
no, for sure.
You just had to put your finger on one thing.
Yeah, it's an excuse to say that we, you know, the year that we made the playoffs, obviously having the leading scorer in the league and I think the best power play at the end of the regular season, obviously was you know, that would be the obvious answer. But I think we were able to really just kind of luck out in the group that we built that year. And I think some people don't really understand some of those dynamics that go into those things. And I was able to have some really good relationships with guys before they even came in that year. And it really helped. And this year it took a little longer. I think as the head coach, ultimately it's my responsibility, but I don't disagree with anything we did this year. I think the process, the most important thing is we stuck to the process. I think most people would have done things a little differently, and another head coach 100% would have done things. But I don't have regret overall on how the staff ran things. Martin, 100%, we could have got more wins earlier if I would have decided to coach to win in the first 2 months. And I don't think that would have been good for our group. If we would have instantly shortened the bench, if we would have simplified our tactics so that it was only about winning and losing. Yes, it's results is the most important thing here, but I believed we had a plan that we could do enough damage in the second half to make a difference. You can't control what's around you. Maybe we were a little late to getting started. We had some injuries that kind of came at a bad time, but that happens. But honestly, I wouldn't change anything. I didn't like our preseason. That's one thing that I would definitely change. We had so many new guys to Europe and to the league, and we didn't play a team from our league. We only really played one team of our level, and that was Cologne, which technically is a kind of a little, was a little above us, and was a tough game, but, you know, that didn't help. But no regrets, Martin. Honestly, I'm really proud of how we stuck with it. I'm really proud of how things went. And we just got so close, and it doesn't bug me how we got there, because, if you would have asked me in September what it was going to look like, I probably would have said the same thing. We might be in last place at Christmas, but I have a feeling this group's going to buy in and care. And I think that's why we clearly got ahead of Asiago and Innsbruck. Our team cared. Our team's tactics, once the guys bought in, it was really difficult to play against. And that's because we didn't panic in the first half. You know, I don't think he'll mind me saying it, but after the last regular season game, Phil Lucas grabbed me quick after the game, and he's a guy I tremendously respect in Austrian ice hockey, for what he's been able to build there, an awesome culture. You know, I don't think he was thrilled with game one's performance by his team, but, you know, he said to me, what was really cool to see about our group is that we played a very technical, tactical game, but had a level of intensity that he thought was tough to match. And talk about a compliment for our group. But I think that's because we stuck with it. You know, I there was no panic early on in the year. There might have been internally some panic. But I'm happy. Honestly, I'm happy. Just the first year just had a little bit more of a Cinderella finish to it than the second year.
And you see, knowing the great Phil Lucas, this doesn't come lightly, and it just doesn't say a thing like that just because you wants it to sound good. He really means it. And I always like when great coaches talk to other great coaches and laud them for their great work and overall what you've done for Bergen hockey, and especially the hockey in Feldkirch. People might have seen it on his social media. There's so much appreciation, and eventually people will probably cherish those years even more. But I want to dig a little deeper in terms of some of the things that maybe didn't go as anticipated the past season for the Pioneers. And I was looking at some of the players that you brought in, and we've seen it time and time before. Teams and big organizations and more wealthy organizations have been wrong on premium imports or lesser imports. But one thing that kind of struck me is the amount of first-year players that you brought in that played for the first time in Europe and on the bigger surface. And a lot of them came out of the East Coast Hockey League. Granted, this is a hit-and-miss thing, and you're trying to obviously hit more often than missing out on some of the players. But how do you try to deal with people who play in Europe for the first time, who are from North America? How do you try to accelerate the process of acclimatizing to just everything in Europe that regards the size of the ring, the angles, everything that goes in it?
Yeah, that's we definitely had a large contingent of players that hadn't played in Europe before. And you're 100% right. There's going to be a massive adjustment period. And a video was definitely one of the components we used a lot early with some of these players individually and small groups to be able to kind of reinforce different habits. And, you know, again, I'm not obviously, I don't like to think about regrets or anything like that. I'm actually really happy with the group that we brought in. You know, it's, there's a lot of factors that go into the players that we choose. And when I mean factors, I don't necessarily always mean on ice factors. We have a budget we have to work with. You know, we have living accommodations we have to work with. We've got a lot of unique situations. And yes, it would be great to have players that have already have experience in Europe at the right level. But at the end of the day, Martin, a lot of guys want to play in the ice league, but they also care about their paycheck. And if they've been playing somewhere else in Europe, they maybe feel like they don't want to come to us for that level. And I am very quick to reject a player that I don't feel like is coming here for the right reasons. And I feel ultimately in the past 2 years with building this team that it was more important to have the right mindset and to kind of build the team around that than maybe a player that was coming down and was willing to take a pay cut, or maybe there was a reason he had to take a pay cut and things like that. So yeah, that kind of answers part of the question and kind of why we bring in certain players and why we did. And in terms of coaching them early, yeah, like I mentioned, it's a lot of video. For the offensive guys, they're quickly outside the dots way too much. You know, Josh Passel, who ended up with, you know, one of the highest number of goals in the league, he would look back at his first 10 games, and I bet you if he looked at 90% of his shots, there was no chance they were going in because they were from non-danger spots. But it was just a lot of video with Josh. And he's just an example of a guy just that in the scoring side of things. But it just takes time. And I think those are fun. It's also fun to have those guys. It's fun to have those experiences as a group, kind of their first time in Europe and you know, seeing them smiling when we show up in an Italian town or we go to Vienna and stuff like that. It kind of keeps the excitement in the group as well. But yeah, in terms of coaching, it's a lot of extra hands-on stuff. And also understanding that we're going to make those mistakes early, that we're not going to panic when a defenseman chases outside the dots when he shouldn't, because that's what he did in the East Coast. My Finnish assistant, Johannes, definitely drove him crazy sometimes. You know, it's having a strong European base of hockey, for him, it's, sometimes tough to wrap his head around why some guys would make some decisions early. But I kind of had to be the sounding board of, well, that's how we played in North America. That's how they're used to doing things. So it's tricky. I'd like to say that you'd have a healthier balance of just a couple guys for sure. You know, we even had two guys that would play their first game of pro this year, as imports in Brady Gilmore and Lucas Sauter. So there was a lot of challenges early. But like I said, it's kind of fun. You know what I mean? We had to go on the adventure together as a group and it was really cool to see, where guys got to.
I guess we got to the point where we'll finally be able to answer some of the questions that got to me via the fans. And there is a lot of interest in the Pioneers and everything that went into last year and that might go into the offseason. One of the more interesting questions I got is if you'd still be involved in helping the team with certain players, acquisitions, scouting. Is your new job a 100% focus on the new team situation kind of job, or will there still be space for helping out the Pioneers if they still need or want your help?
Yeah, I think right now things are all obviously still very fresh. You know, I've currently stepped away from the Pioneers right now, and you know, they're wrapping up some training right now for the next couple of weeks with the guys, and Johannes and Steve, the two assistant coaches, are in charge right now. And there's a lot of internal meetings going on about the staff next year and how things are going to look. And I think, you know, once those questions are answered, if my phone rings, I'm happy to help. But at the same time, I have already started my work for next year. I'm somebody that likes to be prepared. This is going to be a big challenge. So I'm going to go in over prepared and ready to go. But yeah, this club means something to me. You know, and if anybody needs help and makes a phone call, if guys from my staff are involved on the team next year, whether it's the head coach or the assistant coaches, those are guys that I owe a lot of time and respect to. So 100%, I'd be happy to help pass on some information and whatnot from people that I've used in the past. So yeah, but like I said, right now it's fresh. And I think the decisions that, you know, in the internal meetings that are going on right now about kind of setting up things for next year are probably, more important than, you know, asking me for any help just yet.
Just to specify that the season has ended for you guys at the time of this recording, basically 1.5 weeks ago, and there are usually exit meetings and there's this entire process of closing the books on a year. How much a part were you of exit meetings and trying to hand over all the stuff you had that goes into closing the books on a year?
Yeah, it's, you know what, it's kind of a unique situation. You know, right now at the rink, there's only about 7 or 8 players. We have about 8 or 9 guys in the Alps League right now with Bregenzerwald trying to help them in the pre-playoff race. And then obviously right there at the deadline, we moved a fair amount of players to give them an opportunity to play playoff hockey. So we weren't able to meet with a lot of those guys because that was in the midst of the regular season. And some guys literally got on a plane the next morning, or we moved over to Bregenzerwald and obviously wouldn't want to bother those guys as they're in a pre-play, you know, Tuesday night, they have a pre-playoff game 3 here. So, the guys around the rink, I made sure to talk to each one of them, but instead of an exit meeting, I just kind of wanted to talk to each one of them. I wanted the assistant coaches to be able to kind of run those exit meetings. I think it was more important that it was, them asking the questions and looking for the answers that they felt were important for them. And not me interjecting and getting involved or you know, kind of throwing off the player in terms of they all knew that I was leaving and stuff. So I think, Martin, during the year, my open door policy as a coach, I think I knew exactly where most players stood and how they felt about things and stuff like that. So, and ultimately, I don't know what was right or wrong in these situations, but I didn't want to linger around, once the news was that I wasn't going to be back. You know, obviously I still pop in for a coffee cause I don't have much to do right now, but, I don't like when things are about me. I don't like, I don't like when it's about me. And, so I wanted the assistant coaches to have the opportunity to kind of spin things the way they felt was necessary for them, because if their roles change and they grow into a bigger role, this is the start. And I look back at that first year when Mark kind of left the club, this was where I started building those relationships that I think made a big difference for me. So as much as I would have liked to have a little bit more feedback from players, I wanted to give those guys that opportunity to be able to start doing things their way.
Jesus, you don't want to make this about yourself and you don't like to talk about yourself, and then I make you talk about yourself for 40 minutes. Apologies in that regard. But a couple more questions that came from incredibly smart and educated fans. And one of the questions is just about the general development of the Vaalbergian players, not only on the Pioneers, but also on EC Bregenzerwald, because that was a big mission statement. It's one team, it's one state, and you're all trying to kind of grow the region. How would you say have you fared in the past couple of years, and especially this year in that regard?
Yeah, that's definitely an evolving process. I think each year it's gotten better. It's been really fun to have meetings with Guntram Schädler in Bregenzerwald and their head coach Mark this year, and last year was UC. It's been really cool to kind of be involved in, you know, how can we help? How can I, you know, make sure that we're doing the right things for players? How can we help in terms of winning and losing at times? Sometimes it was also shitty phone calls to say, hey, I got to take 3 guys back. We got a sick group and I know you have a road trip, blah, 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 those kind of things. But it's been a different dynamic. This year we tried to have one of the assistant coaches, Steve Bernstil, kind of play a little bit more of a development role, trying to keep an eye on some of the players that were in Bregenzerwald more than they were in Falkirk. And I think that's something that can continue to grow. I think as the resources around here get better, you'd want to have much more hands-on approach. I think it would be great to be able to have a coach on the staff in Bregenzerwald. And use that as also a place to develop coaches. You know, not much different than how Kirk Fury kind of started with Klagenfurt, you know, the Alps League team and stuff like that. I think, and it's not that we need to be able to have control of Bregenzerwald, but just to be able to kind of develop coaches as well. So that when situations like a head coach is leaving, there's maybe been a head coach down the road that's you know, maybe ready to move on to the assistant coach or possibly even the head coaching role. But it's been cool to see the development of some players. I think some of the guys that originally got into the kind of in year one of this were maybe some players that weren't ready and needed a lot more time. But if you look at now the development of some players like Luca Erni and Aaron Sommer and Mark Musbacher and Yannick Lebeda. They've all had different development curves. But one thing I can say is all of them were behind for a year or two because, unfortunately, in Austrian ice hockey right now, we don't have under 20 leagues. We don't have under 18 leagues that are really developing the players at the right level. You know, so Yannick Lebeda, for example, comes back from the Swiss juniors and he's behind a couple of years by the time we need him to be ready for pro. Luca Erni is a great example to see where he's gotten his game to playing for the national team there in the February break was incredible. So yeah, I there was definitely some things we could do better. But there's some things that are just not going to be perfect. In terms of, we just don't have a lot of hockey players here right now. Obviously the goal is to be able to have the Vralberg players slowly joining the pro system. But we're still at a point here in Vralberg where we don't have a under 20 team. We don't have an under 18 team. Next year, we are going to have an under 17 team. So that's a big step. The ELZ that runs through the Federation will play in the under 17 league. So that's a step. But Martin, to be honest, we're years away here in Vralberg from developing players that are ready to be 19 and 20 and 21 that are homegrown. And that's something that I cared a lot about. There's a group of players that I spent a lot of time with, but we're talking 12, 13, 14. So hopefully in years to come, there's a reason to there's enough players that are coming through that under 17 ELZ program. They're staying in Austria. They're developing in the Austrian Bundesliga leagues that at the age of 18 and 19 are ready to step into the Alps League and then slowly be ready for the Ice League. So yeah, it's been cool to see. And unfortunately, we're still years away from permit being where it needs to be. But you got to start somewhere, right?
Most definitely. But how different would the situation look if Switzerland wouldn't be our neighboring country? I mean, is it them just sucking away oozes of talent, or are there other reasons for there not being as much talent as you'd like to have at your disposal?
No, 100%. Switzerland is a positive and a negative. It's a yin and a yang because, you know, our young kids, our U9s, our U11s, U13s, they get to play in the Swiss League. They don't have to travel all the way to Innsbruck for a game at U9 and U11 age because that would be the closest club. So they're getting to develop in those leagues and it's incredible. It's the perfect relationship. But at those ages, we're still doing it with our clubs, right? It's just that we get to play in their leagues. But all of a sudden at the U15 level, we now have kids that are switching over to the Swiss clubs. And, you know, at that age, Martin, at U17 and if the Zurich Lions come calling, of course, it's a good idea. But it's when kids are moving over to the small clubs in Switzerland that really aren't providing anything different. They're just switching over. Those are definitely hurting Vralberg and we need the clubs to be stronger in Vralberg for a Vralberg product because if we want to develop players for the My Sports League and Swiss Division 1 and Swiss Division 2, then we should keep following the path we are. If we want to develop players for the OEL and the Vralberg first and second hobby leagues, then we should continue the path we're doing because that's what we're doing right now. I can speak out a little bit on it more now because, you know, I'm moving on, but it really does bug me. I've been vocal numerous times that we're not making the right decisions here, but we have 100 different bosses in a very small province that all want to have their own say. And ultimately, they're doing things that they think are best for them, that are developing players for their hobby teams. And it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate for the kids. We need somebody to step in and be a true leader in Vralberg, a true boss that people listen to because there's a lot of talent here. You see the amount of players in the Ice League that are in their 30s that are from Vralberg. And they're really good hockey players. And they all stayed in Vralberg outside of the odd one that went to an academy. They all stayed here and played. Whether it was Dornbirn's club, whether it was Falkirk club, Lustenau's club, they all stayed here. And those guys talk about how good the junior teams were here. Like it's still here. It's just, it's changed. And, until people want to wrap their head around that and support a common goal, which is ultimately developing players. It's for the kids. It's for the juniors. It's not going to get marginally better. I hope it does. I really do. I tried my best, but I stuck to the younger kids and those families because they weren't as stubborn and they were willing to kind of follow a development plan. But the older age groups and all the managers and all the clubs involved, it's not right yet.
Yeah, preaching to the choir. A lot of people who think they should have a say at the table, whereas it probably needs one or two who really come in with enough experience and knowledge. But that's maybe a topic for another day. An interesting question from a listener that I got is how a head coach should divide his time when talking to the players. Should he talk to all the players regularly, or should he focus on his top six forwards, top four defensemen a little more than on other quote unquote role players?
It's a really good question. I think as a head coach, you've got to be able to have small conversations with everybody almost every day. It could be good morning, how are you? And just a quick question about a wife, a child, a dog.
Which basically always happens, but
yeah. Exactly, right? Those kind of conversations, as simple as they sound, are really important. But when we're talking about like true 5, 10 minute, 15 minute conversations that include hockey help and tactics and video and things like that, as a staff this year, we had a spreadsheet where we kept track of every conversation we had with every player and which coach did it. And, you know, it was important for me to see who the assistant coaches were spending a lot of time with. We specified whether it was a video meeting or just a conversation, and then if it was positive or negative or neutral. So I always tried to look at that spreadsheet and see where I needed to spend my time. You know, for example, if, you know, Johannes had spent a lot of time over 2 weeks with our defensemen, maybe I didn't need to pull any defensemen around or anything like that. I trusted his conversation piece, and maybe Steve had spent time with some of the young guys that week. So I kind of looked for who was missing, because I always felt like I could find a reason to grab somebody of any age or any role. I probably had the most conversations with some of our players, though, that are probably in that development role. I think if you asked Luca Erni how many times he was in my coach's office this year, we would have both lost track. And we're talking positive, negative, neutral, everything. Because he's in a development curve, you know, sometimes I had to bring him in and say, okay, hotshot, I know you scored last name, but we got to bring it down. Or he was down in the dumps, or we just needed to talk about video and things like that. So obviously it was important to be able to have that relationship with him and push him and bring him along. So he was definitely number one this year for me as a head coach in terms of one-on-one meetings. Outside of that, you know, sometimes your top guys are the ones that sometimes get left with less meetings. And every once in a while, I would look at the spreadsheet and be like, geez, I haven't talked to, you know, our top scorer this week or our first line center in 2 weeks or 3 weeks. Because sometimes you kind of forget about the guys that you think know what's going on or you think are okay. And you're more concerned about a guy that maybe had less ice time last weekend or, you know, was maybe dealing with something else. So, I think I try to do my best to divvy my time pretty evenly. But I think as a head coach this year, it was really important to kind of look at what the other assistant coaches were doing and where I could fill those holes. And ultimately being the head coach and having that title, you have to talk to certain guys at certain times. And so I think for me, it was trying to be very aware of who needed a conversation, a positive one, a negative one. And making sure I grab those guys. I think it's important to eliminate problems before they become problems. So if you see something you don't like, it's important to grab that guy then, because maybe it's not even a problem. Maybe, like you said, it could be something else. It's a really good question. But yeah, for me, it definitely wasn't to do with top six or bottom six or anything like that. It was more about players that were in development and needed more time. And then situational stuff, you know, who needed a pat on the back or a kick in the butt.
Now, this is a question that probably 8 out of 10 times I wouldn't pass on, but knowing you, not only that you're great answering probably diplomatically, but also maybe being able to defer a question. I'll try to quote this or translate this as best as possible. It goes like this. A person wrote in and said, this is not about singling that person out, but rumors had it that Joe Nardi probably wasn't the easiest character in the locker room. And it kind of struck me that the team seemed to perform better after he left. Is it just a coincidence, or was he indeed someone who wasn't necessarily beneficial to the locker room atmosphere?
I think that's a fair question, Martin. Anybody that follows a team and cares a lot about a team during a season, you know, when they see a departure of a player, definitely has questions why. And to 100% shut down that rumor right now is Joe was an awesome person in the dressing room. Joe's actually somebody I've known since he was probably 14 or 15 years old, in terms of development back in Western Canada. He was a great figure in the dressing room. And to be honest, I wasn't actually happy with that decision. I can be honest about something like that. Management felt like we needed to make a change in the club and kind of shake things up and decided that was, the player that they were going to, you know, make a change with. And hey, that's ultimately their part of their job description and their role. As a coach, you know, Joe was a player I brought in and yeah, I didn't like the decision. I disagree with it. I told them I disagree with it, but that was their call. I thought, Joe did his role. I thought very well. He was number one in the league in faceoffs. He was a great penalty killer. And he was, he was a good piece around the dressing room. But he was struggling with European hockey for sure. He was struggling to adapt to certain things in the game, like a couple of other guys were. But I think the team started picking up its play at that time of the year, because that's where we started kind of finding our game and the guys started trusting the system and kind of started becoming a team together. It was right around that 3.5 kind of month mark, right, of Ice League hockey, where it started to click. And management making that statement also had an effect on the players. It you know, when guys start getting fired, guys sharpen up a little bit in practice and realize that, you know, their jobs can be taken from them if the bosses don't feel like they're meeting the standard. So I can't say it didn't hurt us. You know, we only played two games the whole season with 10 imports. So it wasn't that we had to make a move or anything like that. But ultimately we did start playing better at that time. But no, in terms of Joe's personality, no, he fit. That was not the problem. No.
And it's a good thing that we can obviously dismiss those rumors if they're still out there. Because there's also the fact that he's currently on his third team this year. And that's, to me, if I'm looking at a player and his career trajectory, and if he's been on five or six teams like the past 2 or 3 years, that's a little red flag. But once you gain perspective on how careers can be going, can be working, it's just interesting how things are working out, and hopefully he'll hold on to one of the roster spots that he's been given. But just nice hearing that coming from you. Two more questions to round this out. And that second to last question has to be about one game specifically that you might want to have back, because when it really got tight at the home stretch of the year, everybody was looking at the Klagenfurt game that you led 4-1 after 34 minutes. And everybody was like, these Pioneers, holy F, where's that been for most of the first half of the year? And then, of course, Klagenfurt turned it around and you went home without a W in your pockets. Is that the one game where you'd like to have a redo, or is it another game that comes to mind first?
Yeah, there's a handful of them this year where, we didn't have great bounces. You know, it almost felt like we used all of our hockey luck the spring before. And there was some, you know, we had a game early in the year in Bolzano where we scored on our own net in we were winning in the third period, and Lucas Sauter tried to clear the puck and hit Caffey in the back, and it went top shelf in our own net. You know, we were winning that game, I think 3-1 in Bolzano, like at the beginning of the year, which is ultimately one of the best or the hardest rinks to play in. Like, what's the chance of that happening? You know, and then we lose that game just like that. That ties it up, and they score late in the period. Yeah, in Klagenfurt was tricky. You know, that's the first place team. They got a little momentum late in the game, and were able to tie it up. Honestly, a really fluky bounce. You know what I mean? David Mad Dog had played an unbelievable game that day, and all of a sudden, a puck goes off a knee and it goes right to Peterson on the back door, and he kind of whacks it with his backhand. But ultimately, I think the one that that night collecting a point was truly up, Martin. That was our goal that night. You know, at the end of the day, the most important 3 points was against Vienna, whether we got points that night or not. Vienna tying it up with 2.5 seconds to go there. You know, I know that doesn't get us in. We still have to go to Linz. We still have to win in Linz, and Vienna still has to not collect points against Ljubljana, who was playing a throwaway game anyway. But, you know, again, it goes off a knee and it goes right to a guy, and you know, he scores with 2.5 seconds left. That was a punch in the stomach for sure. I just felt bad for the players. Like, they had played lights out good in the last 20 games. I think we were seventh in the league in standings in the last 20 games, and they just deserved a better fate. Even if we didn't make the pre-playoffs, if we would have went to Linz and we couldn't beat that team in their rink for their home ice advantage game, you probably could have swallowed it a little bit better. But yeah, the way that it went down there against Vienna was a tough one. It was a shocker. For sure, standing behind the bench that night.
It's been 11 years for you and your family in Feken, and this comes from a lucky bastard who's got the tremendous honor of having worked in hockey for 15 years for two different rights holders, and once the tenure with the previous rights holder ended after 10 years, I was like, Jesus, it's been 10 years of my life. That's if I'm lucky enough, that's 1/10 of my entire lifetime that I just dedicated to kind of one station and one product and one broadcast. You've been dedicating 11 years of your life to one city, playing there, coaching there. How are you going to look back on Feki? And granted, the city, the club will always welcome you back with open arms, but one doesn't always know how careers are working out. But what will remain from those 11 years in Feker?
It's a big question. It's a loaded question.
We've got time.
Yeah. You know, I guess as a player, it was awesome. Like, it really was. Like, you know, I think about some of those derby games with Lustenau or you know, playing in Dornbirn or big games in Pustertal, things like that were incredible. I remember the derby game against Lustenau where we broke the attendance record in the Alps League, and it went to penalty shots. Myself scored, Steve Bernstell scored, and Kevin Pushnik scored, and Caffey made the last save. Like, that was just cool, right? It's sold out, and there's so much intensity in those games, so much emotion. And I think that's where I started to really... I just cared a lot. You know, you cared a lot for this. You're seeing the emotion in the rink. I'm seeing my little kids at that age. They're 3, 4, 5, 6, you know, running around the dressing room, screaming and yelling, you know, at 11 o'clock at night, hopped up on sugar after a big derby win, you know, stuff like that. Those memories will never leave, you know. It's incredible. And then on the coaching side of it, to be able to be involved in this, the building process has been really cool. You know, to be able to not really treat this as a job, to be able to treat this as like, yeah, just something you care a lot about, a project you really, really care about. I really took it to heart, and I think that made a big difference for me, but it also made a big difference for the club. But looking back on it now, after the announcement came out, leaving a pro hockey team and leaving a pro situation, I know we hadn't done it in a long time, Martin, but it is part of the lifestyle. I you know, the amount of places that I've lived in or teams that I played in since the age of 15 is it's a long, long list. And I think you always can kind of understand walking away from a pro team. You know, I could have been fired this year. I just as easy as finding a new job, right? I'm happy I wasn't, but the hard thing is moving away from the stuff that your family was doing, the stuff that you did with. I didn't realize so many little kids probably looked up to me as I'm kind of naive to those things. I'm a very humble person, but now the messages that I've gotten from families and young kids that you've helped develop from, you know, we're talking now the age of whatever, 10 to 15 to 16, you know, even getting messages from the Vorarlberg superstars like Marco Rossi and Vinzi Rohrer. These guys care so much about this province too. And I started working with them when they were like 15 and 16 here. They're kind of sad. You know, and they're men now, they're adults, they're playing pro. But those experiences with families here, you know, I've been able to take kids from Vorarlberg all around Europe. And now seeing, you know, a 14-year-old send me a picture of the trophy we won in France with a bunch of kids from Vorarlberg saying, "Hey, we'll miss you. It's, I don't care who you are, it's going to hit you in the heart." You know, just next month in April, Martin, we're taking kids to Riga. We're taking kids to the big Innsbruck World Championship. It's kind of the last, well, hopefully not the last hurrah, but it might be. And seeing the memories with those families and my own kids, obviously, it's tough to leave those situations. It's tough to leave as a professional 100%. I hope there's an opportunity to come back here and really thank people again. Because saying thank you once is just not enough. But all of those families, it's tough. It's touching. It's tough. You feel like you're letting kids down because they don't understand. You know, even if they're 12, 13, 14, the amount of messages my kids got from their friends, like, "Are you switching teams? Are you leaving? Are you leaving school?" Like, that was tough. You know, those are tough. Those are tough moments for them. They can't even tell their friends where they're going. You know. Wrapping your head around all that stuff has been difficult. It has, like you said earlier in the podcast, for people to truly understand all the things that go into this, it's difficult. And we were really ingrained in this community. We're not just packing up 10 suitcases and moving. So that is probably been the greatest joy here, is being able to be involved in so many hockey players' lives and families' lives. That has been a joy. It's been a pleasure. I'm just proud to have been able to create memories for so many hockey families here. Because that was ultimately the goal, was to create memories for kids in Vorarlberg. And then hopefully I created some memories for hockey fans here from my playing days and my coaching time. And I think there's one thing I would love people to kind of remember is just, there always could have been a better coach and always could have been a better import player, 100%. But I think ultimately my deciding factor, or not my deciding factor, but something that helped me here was I just cared a lot. And it was all these little things and stuff like that. And I still care. And that's tough to leave. You can't really put a dollar value on that or one memory on that. But it's pretty astounding that it was able to last for so long. And, you know, I think once people realize where my family and I are moving to, there'll be a pretty good understanding that they'll be happy for us. And I don't mean that in a rude way, but I'm not leaving here going somewhere that people will kind of shake their heads at, I guess. And I think that probably made it easier for my wife and I to tell the kids. It's not a lateral move, which a lot of times in the hockey world, you don't know what the next move is. So at least that's what we're telling ourselves right now to make it feel a little better.
But the outpour of emotions, especially in and around Färke, has been tremendous. I've always appreciated working with you. You're one of the very few class acts. Everybody in and around Färke and in the hockey realm speaks highly of you, and I'm wishing you nothing but the best with your future endeavor and hope that we'll be able to stay in touch. Looking forward to maybe having an interview or two once you start hitting that next chapter. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you, Martin. Thank you to everybody in Brabant. Thank you.
Win today, hockey.
Kurz durchatmen bei diesem Wahnsinn. Und das ging rasend schnell. Der Traum vom Finale ist erfüllt. Die
Minuten drin statt nur dabei.
Fans, stimmungsvoll und hoffnungsfroh.
Nice move.